You're listening to DraftKings Network.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Want to apologize to those of you who are used to getting us on Mondays and Tuesdays live on a television feed. We like to do the show that way. In coming months, we hope to be doing the show that way with some production behind us. But at the moment, it's a lot of hit and miss. We will get that corrected. I do want to, though. We have more pressing matters. I want to find out, Stugatz, how it is that Metal Arc Media can correctly honor Hank Goldberg today. I want to make the bet in his honor that that donates a lot of money to whatever it is the charity of his family's choice is.
There's a great bet right now that Mike could take. Novak Djokovic is down 2-0 in the quarterfinals at Wimbledon to a guy named Sinner. And I think Mike can get Djokovic right now in match at like plus 120.
He's now plus 135, down 2 sets. That is first off, let's admire how bananas that is of a price for a dude that is down 2 sets already.
He's a slight favorite.
In honor of Hank Goldberg,
no, but
I am putting
tennis.
In a degenerate unit.
No, it can't be a degenerate.
Slight underdog.
Needs to be at Gulfstream or something. Does it not? Are there
No, I'm doing it through a bookie.
Are there
like
horses?
Any red-blooded American male should.
Stugatz, you know this.
There's always a horse running somewhere, Dan.
But what is... put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Levitard Show. There's always a horse running somewhere, Dan. Yes or no?
I honored Hank Goldberg by going to Gulfstream Racetrack this weekend, and I won 4 horse bets this weekend, one of which I did. There was a race happening in Canada, and it was literally just the next one that was on in the simulcast center. And I went up to the kiosk, and I pulled up Google's random number generator between 1 and 11. And I picked a number, and that horse went off at 23-1 and won. It was an unbelievable day at the races.
It's
I'm
all
gambling again. I was walking around Gulfstream just shouting, "I'm gambling again."
This is bullshit, man.
So, Whittingham, you were roaring. You were down the stretch. You were yelling at television.
Yes.
You're in your 20s, and you're an old-fashioned.
I was the youngest person there by 20 years. Just shouting in the simulcast. Yes!
Were you waving a program against your hip and stuff?
I was smacking it in my hand. I rolled it up and I was smacking it in my hand making the turn.
Find me a horse that properly honors this man. The name of a horse that we can put a bet on, please. Help me figure out how to do this in a way that actually doesn't disrespect him.
I think Mike is in on Djokovic at plus 125. This is very exciting.
It needs to be a horse, not a horse.
Right. He is a horse.
Billy had a shocking take, Stugatz. I don't think I'd heard it, but I think I might agree with him. It was regarding, did you see, Stugatz, do you have any information about what happened with Brian Windhorst last week?
I know he predicted some sort of big trade once the free agency period opened. And
do you know the story, or are you bluffing right now? Do you know the story?
I don't know the exacts. I don't know all the details, but I know he was very popular on social media last week.
Very interesting segment.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Brian Windhorst had us wondering what was going on while not giving us any information as to what may or may not be going on. So he had the world just at his fingertips, and whenever someone would guess, he'd say, "No, that's not what's going on. But I'm not going to tell you what's going on. I just want you to pay attention because something is going on."
Billy, so the whole world is.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, why do you think he couldn't tell us what was going on?
Wow. Are you implying he didn't know what was going on?
That's not what I'm implying. Why would someone who spoke in very clear outline around the big news that was going to happen not be able to just come out and say, this big news is about to happen?
Because he was hedging his bets.
You think he's hedging his bets? I mean, who hedges bets in the news breaking business? We see what the whole weekend was dominated by Kyrie for Russell Westbrook, Nets and Lakers. And whether it happens or not is anyone's guess, but there was no shortage of people out there to tell you that these talks were happening. So in a deal that was a little bit under the radar, right, wasn't really talked about before it happened, Brian Windhorst clearly exhibited the behavior of somebody who knows something is going to happen. But he wouldn't come out and just say it.
Why is
would
that?
Why would Brian Windhorst, a reporter, a big-time newsbreaker, be sitting on the story of the offseason thus far and yet play reticent and coy and not even be able to say these two sides are talking about it? Why is that?
Didn't want to betray a source.
There's no source betrayal. How would the source know that he got it from him? Maybe he was talking about someone else. He's not revealing who the source is. Why would that happen? Why would ESPN employ someone who is very good at his job to not tell us that what was about to happen?
Sugats is so lost right now. He has no idea what we're talking about.
Nope.
Sugats, do you know the story? Do you know like the whole Brian Windhorst story?
We covered this already.
I mean, we
already covered this, and the reason he's totally ignorant on what's happening here, he's trying to bluff his way through it.
Why would Sugats know the story?
Billy, your take, though, is that in those 2 minutes...
Oh, he won first take. I think that's the most first take thing that's been out for a really long time, right?
Yeah, nobody was there.
It was incredible.
That wasn't first take. That wasn't first take. Witty, what's the name of the ship of Theseus, right? If you take a bunch of planks of wood and replace them with new planks of wood on the ship, at the end of the exercise when every plank has been replaced, is it still the ship of Theseus? Better yet, if we took the planks of wood that we replaced and built a new ship over here, is that the ship of Theseus? That's what we did with first take. If I take everybody, I take Molly, and I take Stephen A., and I take Mad Dog, and I take J.J. Redick, and I take them all off, and I replace them with other people, is it still first take? Better yet, if we take it, build it over here on Fox and put Skip Bayless on it, is that still first take? Get out of here. It wasn't first take. Second take, maybe. Third take. That's what it was. Third take.
Billy's contention is it's the best moment in the history of first take.
But it wasn't first take, Amin said. So.
But you,
it was third take.
Yeah, but third take. We got there with where you are on it, but Billy is saying that never before in the history of first take, non-information given, that was 2.5 minutes, captivating. Captivating where information wasn't
given. He captivated a nation. A world, a planet.
Indisputably. Earth. It's the new thing. How do I reel him in? You were going to get...
Galaxy.
That he could have...
Undisputed is a different show.
He could have pointed at the sky until the middle of August, and I would still be staring at that video, trying to find out a conclusion that never came.
I'd give him a show just with him asking questions, open-ended questions with no answers.
If only there was a podcast in which there were NBA-based conspiracy theories that were hatched and then broken down by an experienced panel of experts.
No, I get it. I get it, Witty. Some people like Elvis, right? They think Elvis is the king of rock and roll. I get it, man.
What are you getting at, Amin? Why did Brian Windhorst talk to us the way that he did on third take?
I'm just asking questions, Mike.
Can I ask you some questions then if you don't want to actually wade into these waters?
Can I ask what happened?
Is it because of the culture of fear around the ESPN reporting that has conflicting reports sometimes on compromised information sources, as the reporting has to all be vetted by and come through Woj, and Woj has relationships that must be protected, and everyone over there knows that Woj is in charge? Zamin Al Hassan saying that Windhorst can't say what he knows because it cannot contradict publicly what Woj is saying, and that Woj was saying no Utah trade as he had information. Now the trades are about to come. You've pointed out a couple of different times on this show, the trade information between Windhorst and Woj has directly conflicted on the same network, where you've got conflicting reports from competing reporters. Is that what you're suggesting?
That's certainly a very interesting theory, Dan Levitard, and I'd love to unpack that with you. It does stand in stark contrast to what we saw at the trade deadline, where Brian Windhorst said, Harden's getting dealt. And Adrian said, no, he's not. And then the next day, Harden got dealt. And there was a feeling of, I don't know, maybe embarrassment on one side, maybe shame. I can't describe that feeling. I'm not a newsbreaker. I don't really care about such things. But clearly there was a feeling of reaction. There certainly was a field day on Twitter of people with the memes and all that stuff. And so here we are. We progress 5 months into the future. And a similarly, another big deal is about to happen. And Brian Windhorst, who, again, is a great newsbreaker and is not shy about breaking news, pumps the brakes just before he crosses that line. Now, why would he do that?
Speaking of which, why would the Timberwolves explain it to me? I told people that I've talked to four people who've made a living in basketball, and when I just asked the simple question, can you explain this to me? What's the angle I'm not seeing here? I'm getting no good answers. I mean, who do you hear other than Stugatz making the arguments on behalf of what the Timberwolves just did?
Stugatz is making arguments on behalf of the Timberwolves?
Yes.
Big Why? Fan.
It's because it's nobody's on the terrain, and he wants some terrain that he can take in case Minnesota wins 52 games. So now he's got a rooting interest.
The key to Minnesota having a good team is getting guys that have to stay in Minnesota. They are forced to stay in Minnesota. No one's choosing to go to Minnesota. And right now they have some guys who have to stay in Minnesota. Anthony Edwards has to stay there for at least two or three more seasons. Rudy Gobert has to stay there for four more seasons. Karl Anthony Towns, the rare guy who was chosen to stay there, is going to stay there. D'Angelo Russell has to stay there. That's a pretty good team of guys who are being held against their will. They have to stay there. I mean, it's the best Minnesota could do.
Solid team. Hostage crisis.
But explain it to me. I mean, is it a team that said to itself, well, we weren't very good at defense last year, let's get Gobert? Is it that simple?
I don't think it's that simple. I think this is a case of new ownership starting to flex its muscle. This is the Alex Rodriguez-led ownership group that are saying, hey, okay, you know, Glenn Taylor, the prior owner, who officially cedes control in 2023, he was a conservative guy. He didn't really like swinging for the fences like that. That's not us. We're here to make a big splash.
Splash.
And, there it is. And Tim Connolly was a big move by them. This guy's one of the most respected executives out there. If you don't believe me, just check Adrian's Twitter feed as he gushed about how great Tim Connolly was in the middle of reporting the news, which is kind of odd. Like, you know, but, nah, never mind. But anyways, so Tim Connolly's great at his job, but Tim Connolly knows, as any good front office person knows, your number one skill is managing up. It's not scouting. It's not the collective bargaining. It's making those people happy. And so they want to be aggressive. We're going to be aggressive. So you go out and you look for a guy that on some level helps them defensively. They think. And say, can I get this guy without giving up any of my core pieces? Any of my core pieces. Look at the players that Utah got. They didn't really get players. The shocking thing is this hall of picks. And more shocking than that is the unprotected nature of those picks. Three of those first rounders are zero protection. The last one in 2029 is a top five protection. And it's very reminiscent of the KG Paul Pierce deal to Brooklyn years ago when Mikhail Prokhorov was a new owner and he wanted to make a splash. We're moving to Brooklyn. I need splash stars in there. Get me these guys. What's it going to cost? All of these picks. And Danny Ainge, who is the tie between those two trades, in both situations, in the Boston situation, he got all those picks unprotected and he turned them into Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and one more guy that I can't remember. And here he does it again. He takes a guy that he feels like they've reached the end of the road with, sell high, extremely high, on Rudy Gobert, and let's see what they're going to build over the next 7 years or so.
Give me a percentage of chance on either of these things that the Nets right now are making any of these moves, deals before the deals that aren't meant to go elsewhere, to hopefully, because the offers aren't good enough, mend these fences, everyone reconciles, let's try and run it back one more year. Kevin, we're sorry we've offended you. What's the percentage of chance that that's what's happening right now with the acquisition of someone like TJ Warren?
So Vinny Goodwill of Yahoo Sports wrote about the idea that Josiah, the owner of the Nets, is so done with the Kyrie Irving experience that if they can't trade him, they'll wave and stretch him. That's how done they are with Kyrie. Now, can they mend the fence with Kevin? Maybe. I don't know if TJ Warren moves the needle in that direction that far enough. Certainly TJ Warren would have been a great pickup for them had none of this turmoil happened. And to be honest with you, I don't know that trading for Russell Westbrook gives you anything more than someone who at least wants to play and is going to play every
day. Are you surprised at all that Kyrie Irving's trade value is so low that all it brings you back is Laker headaches and one of the most laughable contracts in the league?
No. We've talked about this a lot, Dan, over the years. When someone messes up, we say, hey, man, like, you're not good enough for us to deal with that kind of headache. If it was LeBron, if it was Steph, we deal with it. We tolerate it. But not you. You're replaceable. We've never fathomed the idea that someone who is of irreplaceable talent level, like Kyrie Irving, would be so problematic to the point of, like, you know what? Never mind. Just no thank you. But here we are. And Dan, it's not like, oh, it's just what happened in Brooklyn. People are taking in the whole resume of what happened in Boston, of what happened in Cleveland. Wherever this guy goes, he seems to be unhappy. That's for one. And for two, he seems to have an impact on everybody else's happiness. So at this point, I think teams are looking at it, and I'm not saying they don't want Kyrie Irving, but teams are looking at it as like, I'm not going to give up anything for him. Anything. I'll take him for free, but I'm not going to give up anything for him. So that's why the Nets are in this weird situation where this clearly God-level talent of a player, the best offer they have is a $47 million expiring contract of the guy who's, waning right before our very eyes.
But if that's God level, then I don't know what the ask after Gobert is on Durant. So you tell me, what the chances are that this owner is so mad that he does what no one has done before, because I've read the report saying they're willing to go into training camp this way, and he either doesn't trade him or sends him somewhere he doesn't want to go, says, bleep your player empowerment, I'm here to blow it up. I've already taken the most colossal loss of embarrassment I can take. Bleep you. I'm going to try and get the best offer. I don't care whether you end up happy or not.
There is no best offer, Dan, because here's how it works. This is how player empowerment works. It's not an ideal. It is a very real leveraging tactic in negotiation. I'm Josiah. I say, if you want to get Kevin Durant, you got to give me an all-star and four first-round picks. That's the minimum asking price, right? If you don't give me that, I'm not going to tolerate it, right? And so let's say Sacramento says, you know what? He's not an all-star, but he's a really good young player. What if I give you De'Aaron Fox and I throw in some other young player that you might like, like Kevin Huerter, and I'll give you the four first-round picks, and I'll throw in a couple of pick swaps in there. Does that work for you? Sacramento, we're terrible. Does that work for you? And Josiah says, you know what? It's not an all-star, but I'll go with it. Kevin Durant hears about it and tells, picks up the phone, calls Vivek Ranadive, the owner of the Kings. If you trade for me, I'm not showing up. I've made a shit ton of money, man. Find me. Find me every day that I'm not there. But you just gave up 6 first round picks and 2 young players that you're excited about for someone who doesn't want to play for you. So Vivek Ranadive says, whoa, hold on now. I'll give this up for Kevin Durant. I'm not going to give it up for the contract of Kevin Durant and nothing else. I'm not giving that up. You know what? Take all that off the table, and I'll give you Davion Mitchell at a couple of seconds instead. And so, you know, Josiah says, well, that's clearly not my asking price. So goodbye. I'll find some other awful place to do Detroit. And so you do this everywhere that Kevin Durant doesn't want to go. He just throws cold water on it and says, I'm not coming.
Just cut to the chase and get to the places Kevin Durant wants to go, if indeed you want to trade him. Yes.
Exactly. Or at least somewhere where you have an understanding with that organization that they think they can convince Kevin if they talk to him. Right. So New Orleans, for instance, isn't on the list. But if New Orleans, if, you know, David Griffin goes in that and talks to Kevin Durant and like convinces him, look, we've got Zion, we got this, we got that. Like, this could be a great opportunity for you, you know, in a city that's going to adore you, da da da. Maybe Kevin Durant changes his mind, but just kind of the absent, salty, send his ass to, you know, wherever, that's not going to happen. It can't happen.
I want to provide, this is going to be Homer accusatory, but I want to provide a player to you that just won the sixth man, that won the sixth man at 20 points per game, which is a better scoring output than anyone since Lou Will. And if you look at some of the greatest six men in history, it's a season that far outshines the likes of James Harden. Tyler Hero nationally is not perceived as this incredible trade asset that you could have at the center of a Kevin Durant trade. Why is that? Because there have been plenty of one-way players, such as James Harden, that have had six-man winning seasons that aren't looked at the same way that Tyler Hero is. I'm really trying to wonder why Miami needs a third team so bad, because you want to say all-star caliber player. We were having that discussion with Tyler Hero last year. He was very good. Did the postseason and that injury diminish his value so much that we're at an unrealistic point? Because I look at Tyler Hero, and I'm like, that's one of the game's greatest assets.
Yeah, no, Mike, you're absolutely right. This is very Homer accusatory talk right here. I don't remember anybody having a conversation about Tyler Hero as an all-star this past season. Yes, he had a great season as sixth man. I don't think the postseason is working against him here. I think it's just merely, yo, is he Jordan Clarkson slash, you know, Lou Will slash any one of these other super subs that comes in and scores 20 a game but really does little else? You talk about Harden. The thing that made Harden different was that he did different things. Harden was a tremendous rebounder as a guard. Harden was the main playmaker.
Wait a second. Don't give me that, because Tyler Hero averaged more rebounds per game than Harden did. Just point to rebounds, Tyler Hero is an excellent rebounder.
I'm not pointing just to rebounds, Mike. I'm giving you examples of multiple things that James Harden did.
Okay, but he didn't that better than Tyler Hero.
He's using James Harden as a comp in OKC at the beginning of this, before Ibaka just signs here for a year.
He had a better six-man season than Manu Ginobili did when Manu Ginobili won it. He had one of the greatest six-man seasons of all time, and it's not looked
By what measure?
By points per game and efficiency. By rebounds per game. Yeah, by points per game. Dude, at 20 points per game, absolutely.
Both of those guys, both Harden and Ginobili, both had major, major playmaking roles for their teams. Dare I say it, they were the best playmakers on their teams. They were the best, like, creating shots for others, players on their team, and they were coming off the bench. So, like, there's a difference there. There's a massive difference.
Please hear me. I'm not making the argument that Tyler Hero is a better prospect than James Harden was. But I'm saying the national discourse around him is such. He is a one-way player that can score in buckets, that can rebound well. There are more comparisons to James Harden than it would be for some of the other names that he's being lumped into right now. I'm just genuinely curious why the well was so poisoned around Tyler Hero, because... Okay, I'm going to come out and say
it. Say what you mean.
I'm going to come out and say it. I think Miami has to pay a white tax on Tyler Hero as a trade asset. Because if Tyler Hero, a white tax.
A wax.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show.
I think if Tyler Hero were black, he'd be looked at differently as a trade asset. I said it.
Was Tyrone Hero.
I came out and said it.
Guillermo, put it on
just
the
Ty Hero.
Put it on the poll, yeah. Guillermo. Do you respect Tyrone Hero more?
You don't mess with Tyrone Hero.
There's a lot of things that work to Tyler Hero's advantage in being a white person. I'm saying in terms of national perception of one straight value, this is the one time where it's working against him.
Get the Jay Billis sound that we had on Beasley and Hansborough, because you've just resurrected the argument years later. You are now just simply making the argument that if he were Tyrone Hero, he right now would be going to Brooklyn in exchange for Kevin Durant.
We wouldn't be needing a third team.
Let me ask you this, Mike. Compare and contrast for me Tyler Hero with Tyrese Maxey as prospects. Tell me what you think about those two guys.
People love Tyrese Maxey, and they'll go.
I'm not asking about people. I'm asking about Mike Ryan. Mike Ryan, what do you think?
I favor Hero in that. Maxey's a turnstile.
I'm asking you a favor. Compare them to me.
Compare them to, like, just give you points per game? I think Hero had the better season.
Do you think Tyler Hero is, like, markedly better at multiple things on a basketball court than Tyrese Maxey? Markedly better. Not better. Not, like, marginally. Markedly better. Like, oh, what? Not even the same zip code.
He's a better rebounder, I think.
I mean, they're both good young players.
If Philadelphia were to center a package around Maxey, I don't think that people would be looking at it the same way.
I'm making the argument that if you center a package around Tyrese Maxey, no one is saying that Kevin Durant could be traded for that. He's Kevin freaking Durant. Like, you can't say I'm going to trade him for his young kid. He's all right. Like, I kind of like him. Like, no.
People are pointing to Bridges. No. People are pointing to Bridges and Cam Johnson, and they're like,
dude, I just talked to Dwayne Rankin, who covers the Suns for the Arizona Republic, and he was like, yeah, like, if Ayton is not a complicit party in what's about to happen, there is no deal. There's no chance that he gets traded for Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges.
Is that why Toronto has now become more of a betting favorite out of nowhere? Or that people are like, why is Toronto making a run here that makes them better at this than Miami?
Because they have Scottie Barnes, and Scottie Barnes, I will admit, is probably a better prospect because he just came off his Rookie of the Year winning season, and he's not white.
And he's 6'10", and he rebounds, and he defends.
He defends. He does a lot of things.
He's a good player.
Scottie Barnes is a better player.
Plus, they have other pieces, right?
Like Scottie Barnes is a better player.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Sugat.
They have a ready-made all-star in Siakam.
Yeah. Like, we'll give you Siakam. Like, they've got options. They've got options, real options. Not like, one day he might be really, really, really good. I'm like, no. I've got a guy right now who's really good.
How about Marcus?
If you're the Nets, you don't have the luxury of being terrible because of the pick obligations that you have towards Houston for the Harden deal.
How about Marcus Spears reporting that the Warriors make a ton of sense?
Marcus Spears didn't report that. Mark Spears reported that. That's a fine. Marcus Spears is his cousin that does the NFL stuff. Swagoo.
That's okay, my bad.
That's his cousin?
Wow.
Yeah, they're cousins.
Yeah.
What's the fine? How much?
It's $5. Wait, is that true?
Yeah.
Mark Spears and Marcus Spears are cousins, yes.
Wow.
So really? Brittany, yeah.
Yes.
Huh?
Yes, both from Louisiana.
Just like Britney.
Just like Britney. That's right.
All right.
No, Britney's from Mississippi, isn't she?
You thoroughly dismissed my take. So
What if Tyrese Maxey was Tyler Maxey and Tyler Hero was Tyrese Hero?
Wait a minute, Mike Ryan just took. Wait a minute, Stugatz.
And what happened with Windhorst?
Stugatz, you cannot.
No, Amin convinced me. I was wrong in workshopping that take.
Brittany's from Mississippi.
Oh.
I do think that nationally he is underrated as an asset, and I do think his race does play a factor in that, but not to the point that I was alleging.
But that's okay. You took the L. You publicly.
Oh, yeah, I was wrong.
You are trying to create a new kind of sports podcast takery where you just walk back. You, the most arrogant. You, the obnoxious. You, Mike Ryan's point is to be right and to be more right than you're right. And you are saying flatly, you know what? I walk it back. I walk back my alleged race playing a factor here.
I don't understand why I have that reputation. If someone provides very strong evidence as to why I'm wrong, I'll internalize it and never give them the public victory.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Whether you hydrate to live or live to hydrate, Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. With three times the electrolytes of the lead in sports drink, plus eight vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, all in a single sugar-free stick. Are you heading to the airport on a long flight? Or do you need something after your flag football game? Well, if I was you, I would definitely go with Liquid IV just for the electrolytes so you don't feel run down. And I know for me, Liquid IV helps me start my day in the morning, and it helps give me the energy to do stuff like cut my yard and wash my car and work out and just face the day. And you can get your energy back while drinking something that's delicious. And when I say delicious, you can pick from flavors like pear, white peach, green grape, lemon lime, and more. Liquid IV is non-GMO, free from gluten, dairy, and soy. However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code DAN at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration using code DAN today at liquidiv.com.
Dan Le Batard.
The strangest place your son has made whoopee.
Like I'm supposed to know that? I made whoopee.
Picture it.
Stugatz.
There was a time, I think Christopher was in high school, and there was a time when I saw something I wasn't supposed to see, which was Christopher on the side of the house appearing to be...
Whoa. What are you talking about right now?
This is going great.
No, it was Christopher and a girl, and you know, she must have been bending over to tie her shoe or something, because
Oh God.
The correct answer is in his father's garage.
So you're close.
You desecrated my garage? The hell happened?
Twice.
What?
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz.
Represented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code DAN for a special offer when you sign up. That's code DAN, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
Can we workshop this as a podcast premise to call Take the L, where two sides debate furiously, but at the end, someone has to all of a sudden just kind of, yeah, you know what?
You're right. A result. Someone has to admit defeat.
There would have to be a neutral arbiter. There would not be someone who routinely 50% of the time take the L's.
Walk away with the L.
Let me just ask what I wanted to ask flatly to Amin, and I'll investigate further if I should indeed take this L. Is Tyler Hero underrated as a trade asset because he is white?
You already took the L.
I'm asking it directly and not in a roundabout fashion right now, because this is my workshop theory. That Tyler Hero nationally is perceived to be a worse asset than he actually is when you take into consideration the season that he just had, which was an historic six-man season. Is he underrated as a trade asset because he is merely white? Amin El-Hassan.
Mike, there are two unalienable truths about sports in general, but basketball specifically. Number one, they don't care what you look like. They care if you could play. In the words of Mike D'Antoni, I'd play Satan if he can hit a jump shot, right? If Tyler Hero is as good as you believe he is, there's not a shortage of people who are like, are going to pass on him. Right? No one's going to pass on him because of what he looks like. Number two, if race has ever played as a deciding factor in NBA talent evaluation, usually being white helps because it's easier to sell to your home crowd. It's easier to put make people feel comfortable. Oh, yeah, oh, he's great, whatever, right? It's never been like, man, my fans will hate a black player. Like, no. There isn't a market in the country where the great white hope doesn't exist.
I kind of feel like Tyler Hero is more hateable because he's white, though. Like, he has on this.
But Mike, you're asking me, are you talking about Twitter? Are you going to talk about Twitter?
Right.
Sure.
Okay.
But it's saying, I'm not talking about Twitter. I'm talking about real life.
Okay,
in
gotcha.
Real life, no.
Well, then I take my L.
I'll give you a great example. In 2002, I want to say, the Suns drafted Casey Jacobson, despite him not being number one on their board at the time. They, like, their scouts had Tayshaun Prince higher, and there was another player who was in the 2002 draft who was really good, maybe Boozer. And they took Casey Jacobson, and the reason why was Casey Jacobson was, quote-unquote, local. He's a West Coast kid who went to Stanford and was likable, and the Suns at the time, the team had some issues and turmoils. I think this is the wake of the Jason Kidd stuff, and they just needed someone that the fans say, I like him. Casey Jacobson went as high as he did, in part because his skin tone offered them some sort of kind of soothing balm on a fan base that was kind of like, I don't know about these guys. In other words, in the words of the great Paul Mooney, he had the complexion for the protection. That's how our league works. People don't like to talk about it because it demeans and belittles players who are actually really talented, right? So I could say Tyler Hero being white actually helps him as a trade asset in a lot of markets because people like a good young white player because of the great white hope. But if I did that, I would be making it seem like Tyler Hero can't play. And the only reason why he's where he is because he's white. And that's not fair to him. So that's why we don't talk about that. But there's never been in the history of the NBA, like, think about it. You just said, like, in America, oh, man, I wish that guy was black. Things would have been a lot easier for him there. This is still America, Jack.
I appreciate it. And summarily dismissed me. And I appreciate it. I will take that L. Thank you for engaging the discourse.
Guillermo at Lebatard Show, please. Is Tyler Hero's trade value increased because he's white, as Amin claims? Yes or no? At Lebatard Show. Also, play the Hall of Fame sound. That was such a better answer, a different answer. Not better. Such a different answer that when I asked something similar of Jay Billis, Hall of Fame sound on our show, about if Tyler Hansborough were black, if he would be regarded as Michael Beasley. I did this on the eve of the championship game. Jay Billis was not here for it.
If someone with Tyler Hansborough's resume were black, do you think people might say he's unathletic, or he's not athletic enough?
Dan, no offense, but this is stupid. I mean, all due respect. I mean, if you guys want to talk about this, I'm here to talk about whatever you want outside of this.
No, this is stupid. We don't have to talk about anything, but it's not stupid. And you can't start
a
sentence. Jay, you can't start a sentence with no offense and then say this is stupid.
Okay, then take offense. It's stupid, and I don't want to talk about it anymore. You want to talk about something else?
No, thank you. Good talking to you.
You too.
Jay Billis of ESPN.
He got me.
Oh.
I've got a minute. Then take offense was a cruel, cruel knife.
Great.
And I got to take the L there, as I do with Neil Rogers and his medianoches under my armpits. In both instances, I've got to take the L. It's okay. Your racism is okay because you did it cruelly, but you did it well.
Make him Tyrone Hansborough. I mean,
Put it on the poll at Lebatard Show. Make it Tyrone Hansborough. Is he a Hall of Famer?
Dan, you steamrolled perhaps my favorite part of that clip, which is like a hearkening to yesteryear, that he ended the phone call with the unmistakable sound of a hanging up of a physical phone.
Oh, Jay Billis of ESPN.
Goosebumps.
Jay Billis of ESPN.
Don't we really have an assortment of those? You can fire off. We've got Joan Rivers. We've got going back to the glory days of hangouts.
Joan Rivers.
We got a whole bunch of people who hung up a landline on it.
I think we made a montage.
Pre-cell phone. Do you know the cell phone? The guy who invented the cell phone. He says 92 years old, he says, we're all wasting our lives on the devices. He's judging you. He's saying, get a life, all of you. The guy who invented the cell phone.
Yeah, he didn't invent the iPhone, though, right? He invented, like, the big brick phone.
That's right, but still.
Yeah, if he had apps on his big brick phone, I think he'd be singing a different story.
What else, Amin, did you find interesting from the levers of free agency? Because Kevin Durant's going to hold the whole thing up, right? Everybody, everything else is going to be Goran Dragic's 1 year to Chicago.
So DeAndre Ayton is like the big domino, right? And that's the big one that's connected somewhat to what's happening with Kevin Durant. DeAndre Ayton is a restricted free agent. He's 23 years old, has such a huge world of upside to him. And in the last couple of years has proven he's starting to realize that potential. The problem is DeAndre Ayton, his relationship with the Phoenix Suns right now is completely shot. It's at zero. It started at the beginning of the year when the owner allegedly walked up to him and told him, I don't think you're worth max, which I don't know what that would achieve in a negotiation. And that's a resentment that both DeAndre and his agent have harbored throughout the season. And then it ended with game seven, him being benched. And when asked about it, Monty Williams didn't say something along the lines of, oh, we just went with the best group that we thought gave us the best chance to win. He said it's an internal issue. And there have been issues with, I guess, DeAndre Ayton talking back and like not living up to expectations and then being very defensive about it. And I guess it came to a head in that game seven. Either way, the kid has been embarrassed and scorned, and now he doesn't want to do anything, which is very terrible for the Suns because as they're trying to engage the Nets in a Durant deal, their best trade asset would be a sign and trade of Ayton. But if Ayton, out of spite, just says no, well, then, you know, they're pretty much shit out of luck.
But, I mean, it's been very quiet on the Ayton front. Is that a moratorium thing? Because we haven't really heard any rumblings of him nearing to terms on an offer sheet, which would totally nuke the Kevin Durant pursuit. It kind of seems like Phoenix, for now, is navigating it well.
Well, I mean, they're doing pretty much the only hand they can play, which is just to sit back and wait. What works in their favor is he is a restricted free agent. So any team that's interested in him, like, for instance, the Indiana Pacers, who we've seen do deal after deal to clear the cap space to provide an outright max offer for DeAndre Ayton, they're still at risk of getting their money tied up for 48 hours and then finding out they don't get the guy that they wanted, right? So they're in a holding pattern. Ayton, in a weird way, his hatred of the Suns or his distaste for the Suns acts against him in this way because if he signs an offer sheet in Indiana and says, screw you guys, I'm out of here, and the Suns say, no, we'll match because we think there's value in that. Now Ayton has to play for a coach that embarrassed him in a game seven on the biggest stage, an owner who's disrespected him allegedly, and he doesn't get to go where he wants to go. So everyone's kind of in a holding pattern trying to figure out what happens next. I think if Durant ends up going somewhere else, that opens a floodgate because then the Suns could engage the Pacers one-on-one on a sign and trade.
Just like in the playoffs, and I want to get to the number of people who have hung up a landline on us in a second, but just like in the playoffs, I mean, where we did a lot of talking about the Nets, the Celtics with Brogdon got a good deal better. That is what they were missing. That is a move that you get the attention of everybody in the East. I don't know who you think is better, Middleton returning to the Bucks.
Are you calling him the missing piece?
Well, no, I'm looking at it, and I'm saying that Brogdon, that Boston's better than they were without Brogdon.
No doubt.
Boston just got better, and my question to you is, who is the favorite in the East?
Oof, that's a tough question, Dano, because there's a lot of moving pieces. We don't know. I mean, if Miami ends up with Durant, if Toronto ends up with Durant, obviously that changes the math.
As it stands now, though.
But Boston, my point is that what Boston did quietly, not unlike in the postseason, Boston was better than the Nets last year. Boston is young and up and coming, and they just got better. It's not a small move to add Brogdon.
You're right. I don't think it's a cure-all, but it's definitely, as you said, they are better today than they were before they did that deal. Milwaukee brought back everybody and added Joe Ingles, who's recovering from a torn ACL that he suffered last season. He could be big for them down the stretch. And Milwaukee can say, look, we were missing our second best player, and it took you seven games to beat us. So whatever version of the Bucks you think you've just bested, like, you didn't see the best version. The best version won a championship. So I think Milwaukee has a very realistic claim to we're the best team. And then finally, Philadelphia, they're getting the band back together. They got P.J. Tucker. They got Daniel House. They acquired De'Anthony Melton. Like, they're deeper. Their problem last year was depth after the Harden trade and shooting. And they've addressed that in several ways as well with good defensive players to surround Harden. So I think Philadelphia can be very confident about, look, I mean, we got midway through the season and there wasn't a training camp and we lost most of our depth. Now we built it back and now we're going to have a full season. We're going to be a lot better than what we were last season. So I think anyone of Miami, Philadelphia, or Milwaukee can say, yeah, it's a nice deal, but you ain't beating us.
I mean, I've been going through our archive trying to find an actual landline hanging up. We've had a lot of hangups, but they sound like disconnections. So yeah. Far, the one that I dug up was former USF head football coach Jim Leavitt, controversial figure. He actually hung up on the show with great authority.
Well, congratulations. You don't deserve to be insulted. Number five in the country. And as I said, the greatest story anywhere in college football. Jim, thank you so much for your time.
All right, thanks, Jim.
Jim Leavitt, University of South Florida. That thing is an amazing, amazing story, and he could not get out of here any faster. He's in a hurry to get away from us. Jim Leavitt, talk about serious, angry Jim Leavitt. Next.
What a great connection. I mean.
Hold on. Okay, so love the hang up, even though it wasn't a clean one. He definitely fumbled and kind of rattled it around.
It was Jim Leavitt.
Afterward, that disconnection dial tone. Guys, Roy knows this one. You know what I'll call that one? That's 20th century, bitch. That's 20 CB material right there. Mm-hmm. You don't hear that disconnection tone anymore. We used to hear it all the time in the 90s. Nowadays, you never hear that. 20 CB.
Mike, you were yelling in my ear that Bruce Fleming hung up on us. Former Major League umpire Bruce Fleming.
What
for
an
some
honor.
Reason. It wasn't a landline, no.
The longest tenured umpire in baseball. Bruce Fleming has been on with us before, and he was the crew chief on this Milton Bradley thing, but he's not allowed to talk about it. So we're going to move into a different direction with him. Is it ever okay for an umpire to call a player names?
You must think I'm stupid to what the question you're answering.
I don't think you're stupid. You're a friend of the show. You're a celebrity.
I am a friend of the show. You just asked a leading question. You know, this interview, it's close to being over, and I gave you the parameters before we went on. You guys do better interviews than this. Call me another time.
That's it. You're hanging up on us.
Fleming was a friend of the show.
I don't know what happened there. Billy, Roy,
we had him on more than once.
Somebody help me out. What happened?
He was on a couple of times. Yeah.
Why would you need him on more than once?
Hey, it's Fleming.
It's a great name. It's a great umpire
name.
Legend. Put it on the poll. Is Fleming Fleming a great umpiring name? Mike, what else do you have in the library? Just empty everything. I'm sorry. You're the one who yelled Bruce Fleming in my ear. You started this.
I'm trying
the
to specifically
biggest lie in show history.
I'm trying to specifically find someone hanging up an old phone. And it's going to take some previewing.
Right.
I can't do that on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
I can read waveforms to the best of my ability, but you're putting me in a tough spot here, Dan.
I can ask Amin why he left out the Atlanta Hawks. Like, what are you doing to Deontay Murray? What's happening?
Excellent filibuster. Yeah.
DeJounte, it's a fine.
Sorry.
Stugatz pronounces DeJounte like my man in The Golden Child, the Ayante dagger. Chandler Yaro. I don't know why you're doing my sweet brother Noomsi with the song today on DeJounte.
The late Joan Rivers, ladies and gentlemen.
Are you Jewish?
I am not.
I
am.
Shut up. Then you don't know what you're talking about. Can we get any clearer?
No.
Shut up. You don't know what you're talking about.
It's very strong. It's all I'm saying. I want
to...
Oh, it's classic.
Oh, yeah.
She was comparing Doyle Brunson to Hitler, the poker player.
Was Are you Jewish? I mean,
wait, Hitler the poker player? Yeah.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.